You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunkin' with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, we are going to kick off the week with a conversation about all the rumors from the weekend. And there were actually quite a few. If we weren't already there yet, we're finally in kind of crazy town rumor season, really more smokescreen season than anything else. We're now, 9 days out from the draft, believe it or not. So there's plenty of things out there that we need to discuss, both from the draft perspective, also a little bit of ownership news that came out, I guess it was late Friday. It would have been after I did the podcast on Friday. So talk a little bit about that off the top as well, and then into some of the draft rumors and other things going around Wolves related. We'll get back to the big board tomorrow, but there's enough news today that we'll hit probably three prospects each of the next couple days as we gear up for I guess the home stretch here before the draft. So before we get into all that, though, as always, a quick reminder to please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so first, this ownership news that came through late on Friday. This comes actually from Forbes. Mike Ozanian from Forbes posted a piece talking about the value of the Timberwolves franchise actually growing. There had been a report, and actually, I think it was just last week I talked about here on Locked On Wolves about the Brian Windhorst interview that he did with Darren Wolfson of the Scoop podcast, where he basically talked about the Timberwolves as not an attractive asset, as having a bottom 10, if not bottom 5 arena with Target Center, even in light of the renovations that took place. And the Utah Jazz were just sold for, I think it was $1.66 billion. And Windhorst, ESPN's Brian Windhorst, was saying that the Timberwolves won't be worth anything near that, given that Glenn Taylor doesn't want to move the team out of the Twin Cities. He's given that as a stipulation. The valuation that Forbes had given the Timberwolves earlier this year was $1.375 billion. The word was that Taylor was getting offers around that mark, a little bit over, but those were potential owners that wanted to move the team out of Minnesota. Who knows where? Probably Seattle, Las Vegas, one of those markets. Virginia Beach area has always been a rumored possibility. But Taylor won't allow the Wolves to be moved. And therefore, his offers, according to Windhorst, he's probably not going to get that. And remember, Target Center is not included in the sale. The Lynx are, as are T-Wolves Gaming. I don't believe the Iowa Wolves are, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Whereas the Utah Jazz sale, that there's a purchase agreement. It's not completely final, but the purchase agreement from a couple of weeks ago included not only the Jazz, but also the Salt Lake Bees, the AAA baseball team out there in Salt Lake, as well as the G League, the Jazz G League team, and Vivint Smart Home Arena there in Salt Lake City. So there were a lot of assets included for almost $1.66 billion. And Forbes had valued the Jazz themselves at $1.55 billion. So just a little over, what is that? I guess a little over $100 million or so more, a little over, $110 million or so more is what they sold for, including all the other assets, including the arena. So Windhorst was saying that the Wolves are not an exciting asset given their playoff drought, the old arena that they have, the recent, and not so recent, I guess 2 decades worth of not having much success, and which I guess is an understatement. But this report from Forbes on Friday actually says the opposite, that the Timberwolves are increasing in value as an asset. And I'll read one excerpt here from Mike Ozanian at Forbes. He says, the sale price of the Wolves has been climbing because of significant interest from various buyers. According to his sources, who would not reveal the names of the bidders, Taylor has already turned down an offer of $1.45 billion for the Timberwolves. One of the sports bankers told me he expects the team to sell for about $1.5 billion, which is about 6.4 times normalized revenue. Remember, this year, the revenue's all wacky because of the lack of a season, of course, or not the lack of a season entirely, but the season being cut short and then now the late start to next season. And $1.5 billion would be pretty significantly above the initial $1.375 billion valuation from earlier this year from Forbes. That was, I think, pre-pandemic or right around the time the season shut down. And I mean, Windhorse had been saying the Wolves wouldn't sell for that much if they weren't going to get moved. And if Taylor continues to have that stipulation on any potential buyer, then I mean, that would be, I guess, the opposite of what Windhorse had been saying, and is notable that apparently he's had significant interest of late. And as Mike Kazanian says in the Forbes piece, there are, you know, everybody just wants a piece of owning an NBA franchise. I mean, there's so much to like about owning that asset, even if it is in not, you know, really a middling market in terms of size, really middle of the pack of the Twin Cities is, in an arena that isn't the best, frankly speaking. But you know, intriguing that's the latest news on that. It doesn't really mean that the Wolves are, going to sell, you know, tomorrow, but this is the first time we've heard that there's actually been an offer made that Glenn has declined. So, certainly notable and definitely good news. One other, transitioning to an unrelated note, but also off the court, is Shams Charania of The Athletic and Stadium tweeted out that the NBA is putting together a social justice coalition board in conjunction with the NBA Players Association, the NBPA. It's a group to advance equality and social justice. And as Shams says, in the aftermath of the Bucks leading teams walking out of games in late August, Adam Silver, Mark Tatum, and Michelle Roberts Adam Silver from the league office, and then Michelle Roberts from the NBPA will be on the board. And then listed, the reason why this is relevant to the Wolves is here is who's on the board. The governors are, these are all owners, Mickey Arison, Steve Ballmer, Clay Bennett, Mark Lazarian, Vivek Randadive, and Randadive, sorry. And then players on the board, Carmelo Anthony, Avery Bradley, Sterling Brown, Donovan Mitchell, and Karl Anthony Towns. Coaches on the board, Lloyd Pierce and Doc Rivers. So really interesting mix of folks there, the owners of, for the most part, successful franchises, I guess, to this point, save for Sacramento. And then some pretty big name players. And Sterling Brown, of course, had recently, just a couple of years ago, was in the incident just about 2.5 years ago in Milwaukee, and he actually just settled the lawsuit with a settlement with the city of Milwaukee, the civil rights lawsuit that he was discriminated against by officers who used excessive force, tased him, et cetera, a couple of years ago. So this announcement came kind of on the heels of that settlement being reached. So Sterling Brown is on that list along with some stars, and Carmelo and Donovan Mitchell, Karl Anthony Towns, Avery Bradley. So good on Towns to be part of that, to, you know, be really involved in a league-wide social justice initiative. So we'll see what comes of that, but it's good that Towns is going to be involved there, and good on the league and the NBPA for putting that together. All right. What I want to do next is talk about the conflicting reports, I guess, separate but conflicting reports, and who the Timberwolves are looking to draft first overall in this year's draft. There have been two reports in the last couple of days in each state who the Wolves are going to take pretty definitively at number one. And of course they are different, and no, neither one of them is Anthony Edwards. So I want to talk about that next. All right. The first report to come out this weekend about who the Timberwolves would take first overall came from Jonathan Wasserman at Bleacher Report. He reported that the Timberwolves are, this is, I believe, from Sunday, that the Timberwolves are going to select James Wiseman first overall, which is, of course, against everything I've assumed, everything that I've projected would happen, anything that I would do. Let me find the actual, what he said. He says, this is Jonathan Wasserman at Bleacher Report in his 2020 NBA Draft Buzz piece from the weekend. He says, quote, multiple sources have told Bleacher Report the name they keep hearing now for the Timberwolves is James Wiseman. Quote, some within the Golden State Warriors think Wiseman is going number one, whether Minnesota keeps the pick or not. End quote. One source plugged into the conversation said, it's an intriguing development given the obvious questions about whether Wiseman and Towns can play together. Sources say the Charlotte Hornets want Wiseman badly, a plausible belief given their needs. Could Minnesota be trying to create the perception of a draft Wiseman as a ploy to pressure Charlotte into offering more in a trade to number one, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, that's clearly what's happening here, right? This is either the Timberwolves trying to raise the value of the pick, or perhaps it's some sort of long play by Golden State. For a long time, people have thought Golden State would take James Wiseman at number two if the Wolves didn't take him at one. But this would be one way, if the Wolves could convince people they would actually take Wiseman, that's one way to maybe convince Charlotte they have to trade with Minnesota in order to get him. And any team trading to two simply wouldn't be enough if they want James Wiseman. Now, we talked last week about how Wiseman doesn't want anything to do with meeting with the Timberwolves. He doesn't want to do a virtual meeting or a workout or anything. And the Wolves wanted to meet with him. I talked about how I didn't think it was a big deal. I guess this is a scenario where it kind of matters because, you know, could you call the Timberwolves bluff and assume they're not going to take him because he won't meet with you? I suppose so. But at the same time, I mean, you know, Ricky Rubio didn't work out for the Timberwolves, I don't believe, back in 2009, and they still drafted him. And, you know, Steph Curry had teams he wasn't going to work out for. And that happens fairly frequently, and it's not a reason to not take someone, but it doesn't help the Wolves' cause, and it could be more difficult. You know, more teams are going to be likely to call their bluff on taking Wiseman, not to mention the fact that, and I've talked about this before, but the Wiseman and Towns fit together is not great. Wiseman could fit from a defensive perspective. However, he's not really quick enough laterally to guard most NBA fours. And so playing with Towns, you know, you'd probably still put Towns on fours. You know, how would that work defensively? I really don't know. Now, yes, the league is swinging back the other way after the three-point shooting, I guess, ongoing three-point shooting craze and kind of the Steph Curry small ball revolution. But, and yes, Bam Adebayo is the second best player on the team that went to the finals. And he is, you know, a big man, and Nikola Jokic is leading Denver deep into the playoffs the last couple of years and 50 plus win seasons and all that. But Wiseman and Towns together, you're not seeing very many teams playing 7-footers together. And as I've said, you're not going to draft a guy first overall and put him behind your all-star center and take him off, you know, have him come off the bench for 16 minutes a game as the number one pick in the draft. That doesn't make any sense. So unless the Wolves are going to do it and hopefully then trade him later on draft night or in the ensuing weeks pretty quickly, I just don't think it makes sense. I understand that Wiseman could be a star someday. Towns is already a star. Putting them on the floor together defensively is untenable at best. Neither player is great in the pick and roll. And well, Wiseman's a better shot blocker than Cat. I just don't see how that works for the Wolves. And so clearly this is some sort of a smokescreen, I would imagine, by the Wolves. I just don't see it working. Then again, if Charlotte thinks Golden State's going to take Wiseman at two, then they're motivated to trade up anyway. So really, no matter how you slice it, if Charlotte really wants Wiseman, then they're going to have to trade up, whether it's to number one or to number two. And it seems like trading to one makes more sense for them, or at least attempting to trade to number one. And so I really think that that's what's going on here, is there's an attempt at the smokescreen. In terms of number two, this is from the same article, Jonathan Wasserman. Golden State will take Wiseman if he's there at two, but that they're split on LaMelo Ball. And there's some teams that, or some members within the organization that think that they should draft Ball at number two, others that don't. They really like Denny Avdija, and there's a chance that they could, I guess, reach for him at number two. I know I've seen some mock drafts where he actually does go two. I could see them thinking he's the best fit for their team. And especially if the Wolves trade it back to three, say Charlotte goes to one and drafts Wiseman, the Wolves trade back to three and Avdija goes to Golden State at two, then the Wolves are back to choosing between LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards, or they could take Obi Toppin and really shake things up. I could see that as a possibility with Avdija off the board and Wiseman off the board if the Wolves can trade back to three and pick up an asset from Charlotte. So that is certainly a possibility for how this could play out. That would be kind of, you know, the 1 out of 10 scenario. I don't think it's likely, but you certainly could see Minnesota trading back to three and still getting an opportunity to pick between Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. Those were kind of the high points from the Wasserman article. Certainly some food for thought there, but again, I just don't see it likely that the Wolves are going to take James Wiseman first. I also don't think it's likely that many teams are going to buy on the smokescreen and bite and actually try and make a trade with the Wolves because of this rumor. Next up, what I want to do is talk about the other report. This one's from ESPN about who is for sure going number one. And no, it's not Anthony Edwards and it's not James Wiseman. Okay, so the report that came out on Monday, which flies in the face of the Wasserman Bleacher Report article from the weekend, is from Jonathan Givony over at ESPN. Of course, he used to be the running Draft Express, the site that I guess was bought out by ESPN, and does a fantastic job. Generally, his final mock draft is about as accurate as you're going to find around the internet, and the scouting reports he does on players is fantastic too. So I'm going to read actually a chunk of what he has. This is an ESPN Plus article, so I can't read the whole thing. It is a subscriber only piece, but I'm going to read a little bit here that pertains to the Wolves. So he says, it's still difficult to have a firm grasp on where each projected lottery pick will end up, though a consensus is beginning to form among teams that split the top prospects into two tiers. Unless a surprise trade completely disrupts the top of the draft, LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman are likely to make up the top three in some order, according to conversations with multiple team executive scouts and agents. Side note from me, we've known that forever, so that's not exactly breaking news. Okay, now back to what Givony says. He says, most NBA front offices are operating under the assumption that Ball is going number one, either to the Minnesota Timberwolves or a team that trades up to select him. Some popular picks among executives to make such a move for Ball at number one include the Bulls, who are at number four, the Pistons at seven, the Thunder at number 25 with a stash of future firsts. That is a fascinating list of teams. Oh, I should say he also goes on to talk about how Ball hasn't done any actual workouts for teams, doesn't plan to do so, and Wolves and Golden State are trying to trade four-star level players without deals materializing, etc. And he's got a few other notes about just players who generally are striking some interest or rising up the board. Then also that nobody really knows what's going on at the end of the first round, which is typically the case, but it really seems that that's the case this year because, again, without a real top, you know, it's not a great draft at the very top, but there's a lot of guys who you could argue for going as high as 15 and as low as 40 in this draft that are almost interchangeable in terms of their, I guess, in a vacuum scouting report. So, you know, once you get to the middle, late part of the lottery and then into the last part of the first round, you're just looking at team fit and you know, rolling the dice on what you think, you know, the potential might be for some of these guys to be more than a role player moving forward. Let's talk quickly about these. Well, first of all, the rumor that Ball is going first, that doesn't surprise me. I've thought that Ball is most likely to go first to the Timberwolves, or somebody will trade up to the Timberwolves to get Ball. Because again, and really to boil this down very simply, Ball has the best NBA ready skill that's head and shoulders above anyone else in this draft in terms of, you know, the gap. And that's his court vision, passing ability, and all the things that go with that, his offensive IQ, his feel, however you want to phrase it, all those things lumped together is head and shoulders above the next player. Yes, Anthony Edwards is physically gifted. So is James Wiseman, but there's also other big athletic players in this draft. There just are. Yes, there's players who are great shooters. Ball is not that player. But yes, there's players that are great shooters, but there's nobody that's head and shoulders. Yeah, Aaron Nesmith shot 52% last year in an injury shortened season, but there's a lot of guys who shot better on more attempts over the course of their college careers. So Ball is the guy who has that one NBA ready skill. And if you're going to swing for the fences, which you should do with the number one pick in any draft, Ball is that guy. Maybe Edwards has a higher ceiling overall. Maybe Wiseman does. But I would argue that Ball has the best floor-ceiling combination. Worst case scenario, he's going to be a really good backup point guard. I think it's very likely he's an average type starter point guard immediately in the league. I think he could, that his floor is extremely high, whereas Edwards could be an Andrew Wiggins type player or potentially not even good as Wiggins off the bat, defensively, especially because of the issues he had at Georgia. And James Wiseman, until he develops a jumper and or improves a little bit defensively in terms of guarding in the pick and roll, he could struggle initially as well. And that's why I think that the floor ceiling combo of LaMelo Ball is extremely important, and it's what's going to get him drafted so high and likely first in this draft, in my opinion. So let's talk about these other trade destinations. The Chicago Bulls at number four. It's been a while since we've talked about them, but I've long thought that they're a really intriguing partner for a couple of reasons. One, because they've got guys like Zach LaVine, who has a couple years left on his extension, on his deal, and then Lauri Markkanen, who's going to be up for an extension, as well as some other young players they're less likely to trade, like a Wendell Carter, etc. And then also, they have the number four pick. And so the Wolves could trade back to four from one and still get their pick from likely Obi Toppin, Denny Avdija, and Killian Hayes, Tyrese Haliburton, any of those guys, Devin Vassell, if they want to reach for him at four, Patrick Williams would be a little bit of a reach there. There's plenty of guys they could take at four. And, you know, assuming that those top three guys are all off the board, or maybe somebody shakes it up and takes, you know, Avdija, maybe the Warriors take Avdija at two, the Wolves are at four, and they still get a crack at either Edwards or Ball if one of those guys falls. Although if the Bulls trade up to one, I guess it would be probably to take Ball. Or the Wolves could then trade back from four if Wiseman's still on the board and there's a team that wants to trade up and get Wiseman. So I think that's a really attractive spot to be in this draft, and the Bulls have some intriguing assets. I'm on record as saying I don't really want to trade for Lauri Markkanen, because then the Wolves end up being the team that has to extend Lauri Markkanen, and that's almost surely going to be an overpay, given that he's 3 years into the league, hasn't shown clear improvement, and actually regressed a little bit in some ways this past year. I do think he's almost a perfect fit with Towns, and it'd be a lot of fun for a year, but then I'd worry about what his extension looks like. Zach LaVine, I think, if the Wolves have decided to move on from Malik Beasley, and I don't think that they have, LaVine's a really good fit at his price point, at what he's getting paid for the next couple of years. That's probably, especially now, almost for sure going to be more than Malik Beasley. And at all things equal, I mean, LaVine might be the better player today and might have the better upside overall. But if he's $4 or $5 million more a year, you'd rather have Beasley for a longer period of time than LaVine for two, and then have to pay him as a max player in 2 years when he's in his prime still. He might still not be a max player. LaVine might be a fine third player on a playoff team. He might be a fine third player on a team like the Timberwolves, but you're not going to give him max money in 2 years unless he really gets better defensively and continues to improve as a playmaker. So the Bulls are an intriguing trade partner because there's lots of different pieces there that could make sense. And you're rolling the dice on LaVine at his contract number. You're rolling the dice on Markkanen related to his extension that's upcoming. So, it's tough for me to say what I would do there. I certainly wouldn't want to trade one and the 17 and just get back the four and one of those guys that you then have to pay. I wouldn't really want to add Jarrett Culver to the trade. I mean, you'd have to add somebody to match the salary. So maybe it's Culver. If you're getting LaVine, you almost have to put James Johnson in the deal. Maybe it's a sign and trade with Malik Beasley. That gets really complicated. But the Bulls are an intriguing trade partner. I still think that that's maybe the best case scenario. The Pistons at seven, the only way that makes any sense, and we talked about this last week, is if the Wolves get Luke Kennard from the Pistons and get the seven back. That's almost enough to make that deal work. I think Kennard's that good and actually a really good fit with D'Angelo Russell in the backcourt. You'd like him to be a little better defensively, but he's a better defender than Malik Beasley. And so, I think you can make that work. The Thunder at 25, I never even considered because... basically, what you're doing is you'd be making that trade for the future first round picks. And I'm going to pull up here what the Thunder actually have in terms of 2021 picks. Let's see. They have their own 2021 first round pick. They have Miami's first round pick. And then they have the right to swap with Houston, depending on where Houston lands. Of course, both Miami and Houston are going to be good, but the Thunder's 2021 pick isn't going to be very good. I'd be surprised if the Thunder gave up their 21 pick in order to make this deal, but that's what Gerson Rosas would ask for. They would say, give us your pick and your 25 this year to make this deal, plus, you know, whatever other asset you want from the Thunder. They're not going to give up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander most likely, but what can you find on their roster that that would be worth making that trade plus the 2021 pick? That is a real possibility and one I hadn't considered. So I think what I'll do a little bit of a deeper dive with the Thunder and look at their roster and see if I can come up with a trade that makes some sense. Now that we know that there's at least a rumor that they're interested, at least according to Jonathan Givony. And if that's the case, that's a team that we hadn't really considered to be a strong suitor simply because they don't already possess a top 10 pick. So we'll take a closer look at that here later this week. All right, that's all we have for you today. Lots of draft rumors today. We'll get back to the Big Board 3.0 tomorrow. I believe we're on number 17. So we'll do 17, probably 17, 18, and 19 on Tuesday's show. If you're not familiar with the show, we do this every day, Monday through Friday. And later this week, Locked On NBA mock draft will be posted on the Locked On NBA feed. So we'll talk a little bit about that and who I selected at first overall. But at this point, you could probably guess who that's going to be, but we'll get some reaction from, I believe, Chad Ford and some of the other experts over at Locked On my selection, and we'll talk about it here on the show as well. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Also, a reminder that today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com. Use promo code Locked On. You get 20% off your next order. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.